welcome to episode 632 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and I'm going to be talking about a recent number one that's come out from Top Cow called The Freeze. It's from writer Dan Wickline, with art by Philip Seve, letters by Troy Pateri. And we had Dan and Philip on to talk about the series before it launched, but I just wanted to come on, and now that the first issue has been out for a few weeks, talk specifically, go over kind of a synopsis of the first issue, give my thoughts, and kind of bring everybody up to speed with what happened in the first issue, and give you an idea if you might want to jump on. It's a very interesting premise, as Dan and Philip told us when they came on previously. The world has had this unexplained phenomenon where everybody has become frozen in time, except for one particular person, Ray. And Ray has the ability to unfreeze other people by touching them, which just opens up a whole nother realm and layer to what's going on in the world. And especially for Ray, like the stress and the knowledge of having that power, what it means for everyone else. How valuable Ray is in terms of, you know, wanting to protect him. If he's the only one who can allow people to move around and to become unfrozen, he obviously wouldn't want anything to happen to him. What happens to the human race if something happens to Ray? Also, what about things like any child conceived? What will happen there? Will babies still be able to be born? Will they be able to be, you know, grown inside other people? I suppose if they're alive, they would, right? Or if they're awake, so to speak, that they would. But what if they're not? And things like that. So there's a lot to unpack. And I'm sure as the series goes on, from what we heard Dan say, that he plans on exploring a lot of those kind of conundrums and interesting questions, and maybe even have other people, other creators play around in the world of the Freeze as Dan and Philip have conceived it. So let me go ahead and give kind of a synopsis of the first issue and then some thoughts on what takes place. So it starts off, we see somebody standing on the roof of a building looking off with binoculars, and he sees some other armed individuals heading toward the building. He informs somebody via radio, hey, we've got six armed unfriendlies inbound, and the Hurricane's right behind them, lifting off in 5 minutes with or without you. And behind him, we see a helicopter. So not sure how we've gotten to this point. We're kind of starting in the middle of the story, so to speak, because story-wise, we haven't even met Ray. We don't even know about the Freeze yet. So meanwhile, we see another armed individual down inside. It looks to be a high school. There are lockers. There are people standing at the lockers, and it's a comic, right? So everybody is static and frozen in place, but that's really no different than what we normally see in comics, right? That nobody's moving. And so this armed individual that's down in the hallway of the high school says, we'll be right there. A couple more armed individuals inside a classroom are saying, hurry up, we've got to go. And they approach a blonde woman, and they have a photograph, and they say, this is her, we got her. Another man says, are you sure? I said, yeah, man, do your thing. And this other man comes over, touches this blonde person, and we see her skin kind of lose this bluish hue that it has. And she sort of comes to life, so to speak. And she says, who are you? What's going on here? And they tell her, you know, there's no time to explain. You need to shut up and come with us now. And they radio up to the helicopter pilot that they've acquired the target. They're on their way. By the time they get to the roof, the rain has started coming down. The pilot tells them all to strap in. It won't be a fun ride. Meanwhile, the six armed individuals that he had seen approaching have reached the top of the roof. They open fire, and they actually graze the shoulder of one of the individuals in the helicopter. And then the helicopter pilot says, we should be out of their range now. They take a look at the shoulder. He says, I'm fine. It's just grazed. Meanwhile, the man that woke up this woman is asking if she's all right. And she's like, no, I'm nowhere near all right. Like, who are you? What do you want from me? Why are they shooting at us? Why weren't people in the lab moving? Where did the storm come from? Like, there's all these questions that she has. You know, she's just been thrown into the deep end, sort of along with us. And so in a way, I guess this woman, we don't know who she is, we don't know her name, but in a way she's our point of view character, because this man who woke her up is about to start explaining to her what's been going on, and in explaining to her, also explain to us. So he tells her his name is Ray Adams, and as far as the other questions go, it's going to take a lot of explaining. And so he starts telling the story of the freeze and what happened. He says that so much has happened, he's not even sure how long it's been, and it's hard to believe how quickly everything has changed. And he basically woke up one morning, he kissed his mother goodbye, he pet his dog, he grabbed his lunch, and he got on the bus and went to work. And he said he was a nobody back then, just another cog in the machine. And we're not even sure what exactly he did or what kind of company he worked for, rather. But he heads to this high rise, says hi to the receptionist, goes upstairs, and apparently he works in IT for this company. And one of his bosses tells him that his computer isn't working. Old Man Stout, they refer to him as. And he says, the whole thing's fried, my computer won't turn on. So Ray says, let me take a look. He gets under the desk and he says, I think I see the problem. And the thing's just literally unplugged. That's the problem. It's just like, dude, just plug your computer in. So when Ray goes to plug it in, he's shocked. There's a spark from the plug. He says, ow. He stands up from under the desk and says, you should be booting up now. And he sees that this man, Stout, is frozen. He's not moving. He waves his hand in front of his face. Mr. Stout, are you right? Nothing happening. So Ray steps out of his office into the larger common area to tell people, hey, I think there's something wrong with Mr. Stout, and nobody else is moving either. And Ray's like, what's going on here? He looks over at one of his coworkers who's taking a drink of coffee, and the coffee's just pouring down the guy's chin onto his shirt. And the clock has stopped at approximately 10:47, 10:48 maybe. And so Ray's like, maybe somebody's playing a joke on me. Nobody's moving. But then he noticed people that were frozen that wouldn't have played along no matter what. Just people that just – they're not that way. They're not going to be in on any kind of practical joke. And so he was watching people, waiting to see signs of people breathing or blinking, but nothing. It was like a scene out of a bad science fiction movie, he tells this woman. He says, man, I had no idea what was going on at that point, even the true scope of it. He's just thinking this can't be happening. He looks outside and he says it's like a war zone. Like the people stopped, but other things didn't, like cars. And so he looks down at the street below and there's cars that have slammed into each other or they've run into buildings. People are crushed underneath tires. There's flames going on from the accidents. Nobody's coming to respond to them. Nobody's moving. Only Ray. Ray's the only person that's moving. So he's starting to freak out a little bit here. He's like, his heart starts racing. He's not sure what's happening. And as he backs away from the window, he bumps into somebody and they just kind of fall over like a mannequin, right? They're still not moving. Ray's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I need to think this through. I need to work it out logically. Maybe I'm dreaming. How do I wake myself up? He's looking at his phone. He's like, can I look things up while I'm dreaming? Why am I talking to myself? And he's just about to lose it. And then he sees a coworker, Lisa. And he's like waving his hand in front of her face. And she's not responding either. And then he trips over the guy that he had knocked over. And he knocks over Lisa, falls on top of her. And that's the first time that he noticed that there was a physical change in this frozen person. She had this bluish tint to her skin. And he noticed her pupils had gotten so small you could barely see them. But it's also when he made the most important discovery. And as he's laying on top of her and makes physical contact with her, she wakes up. And she's like, wait, what happened? I'm sorry, I didn't see you. And Ray is just overcome with relief at another person that's talking and moving, right? And he hugs her saying, thank you, you're talking, you're moving. And she's like, hold on a second. What are you talking about? Of course I'm talking. Of course I'm moving. Are you on something? And so he starts trying to explain, right? Well, until a moment ago, I was the only one else moving. Everyone else is frozen. The whole world's on pause. And she's like, you're crazy. I'm going to call security. You can't just grab me. And Ray's like, just hold on a second. Look around you. Just look around. And she says, what are you talking about? Wait, what's going on here? He's like, that's what I was trying to tell you. I was under the desk. I was plugging in a computer. I got up. Everything was stopped and frozen. But when you look at the clock now says 11:15. So apparently time is still moving forward. But somehow everybody is frozen. And so he mentions to her, cars outside have crashed into each other, but no one's moving, at least not until I accidentally touched you. And so she says, well, how long has this been like this? He says, 20, maybe 30 minutes. I'm not exactly sure. So she touches another one of the girls in the office. Nothing happens. And so Lisa says, Ray, you try. And again, I mean, it's early on in this phenomenon. But I think it's totally overwhelming and an experience no one has ever experienced before in the course of human existence that we know of. But I think even if I were Ray, I would have a pause. I wouldn't just start touching people. But Lisa's like, nothing happened when I touched her. You try. And he's willing to try. I don't know. I think I would try to figure things out a little more before I started touching people at random. Like maybe I would go try to touch somebody that I knew for sure I wanted to be awake. So he does touch this person and they wake up and she's like, wait, where did you two come from? And Lisa's thinking, why didn't my touch work? What's going on? What touch? And so they go out there, they run into another one of their bosses and this woman that the second woman they woke up, Daisy, is still trying to get answers. And Lisa says, nothing's going on, Daisy. Just touch Mr. Ordway's hand. And she's like, is this some kind of joke? And I'm like, no, it's not a joke. It's not a dream. And so Daisy tries touching him. Nothing happens. When Ray touches Mr. Ordway again, he wakes up. And again, I have to wonder, it's like, okay, this guy, from what we saw of him briefly, being on the phone, being preoccupied, being a boss who clearly self-centered, self-involved, let's say. Is this somebody you want awake? Like if you're waking people up, I mean, don't you want to wake up like-minded people? So again, I just find it strange that they're almost waking people up at random. So anyway, more time has gone by. It's 12:21 now. And they've explained Mr. Ordway everything's going on. And again, he says, you didn't see anything. And Ray's getting a little frustrated saying, no, I told you. I got up. Stout wasn't moving. I told you everything. And Ordway's like, well, how do we find out what's going on? Meanwhile, we come to realize Daisy's pregnant and she starts having pains and she's bleeding. And so they decide they need to get her to the hospital. There's a hospital right around the corner. So they take her downstairs. They swipe a cab from a cab driver that's standing right there, grab his keys, take her to the hospital. Ray touches a doctor, touches a nurse. And they want to know what's going on. And Ray says, we'll explain everything after you help Daisy. And they wait and they wait and they wait. And finally, it's almost 2 p.m. in the afternoon. The doctor comes out, tells them that their friend's going to be okay. Daisy's going to be fine. The nurse is with her. And Ray says, well, what happened? What about the baby? And the doctor says, well, I'm not even going to pretend to understand what's going on. But as far as I can tell, you touched Daisy, so she woke up and was revived, but the baby wasn't. Right, and that goes to what I was saying earlier. What about any new babies that are conceived? Are they going to be awake or not? And there's other babies out there. You got to be careful about waking up somebody. So basically what happened was her body took the stasis of her unborn child to mean that the baby was deceased. And so she started to have a miscarriage and try to expel the baby. So they were able to remove the baby, and Daisy's now stable. And Ray's like, okay, so you said the baby wasn't unfrozen when I touched Daisy. Should I unfreeze it now? And the doctor says, well, the baby's very premature, and awakening it right now is going to put it at risk. So I think leaving the baby in stasis for now until we have a better understanding is probably what we need to do, because, there aren't enough people that the baby could need surgery. Then you're talking about waking up surgeons and, what about power? What about all that kind of stuff, right? A lot of questions to be answered. So Ordway takes that as kind of a sign to kind of make the point that I was making, right? Like, we need to be really careful about who we wake up. We can't just go around touching people and waking them up, right? Because we have no idea what happened. And like the doctor says, we got to decide as a group before Ray wakes anyone else up. And Lisa's like, well, I don't care what you say. Ray's going to unfreeze my sister, and that's not even open for debate. And Ordway says, okay, that's fine. But after your sister, we hold up. And doctor says, yeah, there are too many unknowns right now. We need to get a better understanding of what's going on. So Ordway says, meanwhile, while we were waiting, I did some checking. The internet and the cell service still work. but no one answered my calls. Social media works, but there have been no new posts. No one has posted on social media. I guess in some ways, if nobody posting on Twitter would be a good thing, if we could get a few hours of no Twitter posts, I think, stop the vitriol and the arguing. But anyway, that's a whole nother conversation and whole nother type of podcast, right? So anyway, Ordway says that it basically looks like all of humanity has stopped and we need to decide what to do next. And Ray says, well, I'm going to take Lisa to check on her sister. I'm going to check on my mom, and then we make a plan. And so they drive off, and Ordway and the doctor are left looking after them, and I imagine contemplating, yeah, what comes next? And the other thing, like, who of these people is, if any of them, are stopping to think, like, who are these people to decide? What gives them the right, just because they're awake? I mean, Ray's the one with the power, but he woke up Lisa almost accidentally. And they woke up Daisy and Ordway just on a whim because they happened to be the next two closest people to experiment with to see if they could wake them up. The doctor and nurse, you know, obvious, they needed their help. So it's a small amount of people right now, but like, again, what gives them the right to decide? What makes them qualified to decide who to wake up and who not to? It's a very interesting thing to think about. Like, if you were in that position, if any of us were in that position, who do you wake up and who do you leave asleep? Right? I mean, do you only wake up people you know personally, who you can vouch for their character? But then at the same time, this is a whole new world, right? Resources are plentiful in a way because so many people are in stasis. You just go around just trying to wake everybody up, as many people as you can. It's a lot to ask for one person. But again, who decides? And even if you know someone personally and you can vouch for their character, you can vouch for their character in the world we know, in the society we know, under the rules we know. If you wake up people where they can go and do anything without consequences because everybody's in stasis, who knows what crazy ideas people might get, you know, from inappropriate touching to like robbing and thieving. And is it robbing? Is it thieving? If you just go in a grocery store and take what you want because you're awake and you need to eat, how are you supposed to pay for it? You know, does money even matter? All these questions are interesting questions to think about. But anyway, in the story, Lisa says, well, you know, even at a time like this that Ordway's got to be a boss and a jerk, why shouldn't we just start unfreezing as many people as we can and get things back to normal? And Ray says, well, you know, I don't like that guy any more than you do, but what he says makes sense. Like, we need to stop and think about what we're doing because we don't know what caused this. And if the people frozen are safe, are they going to eventually start falling over and dying? Like, we have no idea. And Lisa says, yeah, we need to find the people who can answer that then. Like, maybe that's who you go and start waking up, like scientists who can try to understand and study what's going on. And as they're driving to Lisa's sister's house, Lisa says, oh my God, pull over. Ray says, what is it? Did you see someone moving? But actually what she's seen is a plane crash. And Ray thinks, you know, up till that moment, I'd been looking at the freeze as a local thing. Then no reason to think that it just affected their building or the area of that city. But that was all his brain was really allowing himself to consider. But as he looked at that plane full of people that basically fell out of the sky into a busy city street, killing hundreds, if not thousands, that's when it started to dawn on him. Like, how many planes had been in the sky at that moment when the freeze happened? How many cars were being driven? How many surgeries being done? Just how big of an event was this, right? And worldwide, how many people would die because of the freeze? And Ray says, it's the first time I wondered if the entire world had frozen all at once and if he was the only person who could wake them up. And Ray stands there on the highway overpass looking at this wreck and this fire and all these this carnage, this destruction, and says, oh, Jesus. And it's to be continued. And that's the way the first issue ends. So, again, so many questions to be answered, so many interesting dilemmas and problems, and in a way if this is a permanent thing, unless Ray touches you, in a way you're starting society over. But all the building blocks, all the tools of society are there, right? Which makes it extremely dangerous, which makes it, you know, all the weapons, all the toys are just laying there to be picked up by anybody. So you've got to be extremely careful about who you wake up. And at some point, the amount of people that are awake, people are different. People have different ideologies, different philosophies, especially in a very strenuous, never before happened in the course of human history kind of setting. People are not going to react the same way. People aren't going to view things the same way. They're going to disagree. So at some point, you're going to start separating into factions and politics start coming into play as people don't always agree. And then again, you know, there's no law. There's no law enforcement. There's no, you know, we have kind of agreed upon societal tenets, right? That we follow. Like we all agree to drive on the right side of the street, and we all agree to, you know, not walk around punching people in the face. Yes, there are laws that say if you do that, you're going to pay consequences. But there's, even without those laws, I mean, the random person is not going to walk around attacking and punching other people. It's just, in order for society to work, there has to be a level of cooperation. And so now you're talking about starting society over again, and there isn't that law enforcement necessarily. There isn't that trust. There isn't that, you know, a society takes time to develop, and technology develops along with it. And it's a much more complicated living organism than you would first think, right? But if you take a society that has knowledge of those things, and you take away consequences, and you take away kind of the rule of the masses, so to speak, then you're opening up an entire new realm of possibility, right? Like in our society as it is now, if one person were going around doing heinous acts, and let's assume for the sake of this argument that law enforcement, jail, prison, punitive punishments doesn't exist, right? It's a more of a tribal kind of society, but there literally are tens of thousands of people in this society. If one person is doing something that's detrimental to that society, if they're going around killing or harming other people, you can stop that person because you outnumber that person by so many. Like you're at some point, the point's going to come where that person does something where you say, no, this person is not, whatever they're doing is harming the society. They can't be allowed to be in the society. They need to be held prisoner. They need to be executed. They need to be extricated from the society in some way, right? But we started with one person. Ray was the only one moving, and now we're up to five people. But what if this doctor decides that he doesn't want to be a doctor anymore, or he actually wants to start going around the city cutting people open to see if he can figure out why they're frozen? There's no law. There's no, like, who's to say what he's doing is right or wrong? Again, without knowing why this happened, without knowing the greater scale of it, is it wrong for him? I mean, are these people effectively dead until Ray wakes them up? How long can they stay in stasis? Do they still age? Time is still passing. Do their bodies still age? There's so many questions to be answered, and I think this idea is so big and so huge, I can't imagine that all the questions are even going to be answered in the story that Dan Wickline and Philip Seve tell, because it's too big. You can't, I mean, it would go on forever and ever. You could have every comic creator that's currently working in the business right now telling stories in this world. Like, that's how vast it is. Like, the number of individual people on our planet is the number of individual stories you could have to tell, right? Everybody's story of how they got awakened and how many other people were awakened at that time and how society was different. There's different perspectives on the same person. So yeah, it's vast. I don't know if Dan and Philip realized just how big of an idea it was. I think Dan said that he started to realize how big it was when he started plotting out the story, and he would get these other little questions that would lead him down other story paths. And so the challenge is in reining it all in. But I do recommend it. It's very well paced. It's very well told. The art by Philip Sebbes, very well done, especially the color work, which Philip's doing on his own for the first time. So I applaud him for his efforts there. And it's a really great story. It's very interesting. It's very intriguing. I can't wait to see what happens next. A couple of things come to mind, like how to answer all of those questions and what happens when something goes wrong. That's what I'm really interested in, because you start waking people up. Like I said, you never really know somebody else, no matter how well you think you know them. So what happens when somebody starts doing things that they shouldn't in this society, whether that be taking advantage of frozen people or something else, trying to start up their own faction or name themselves Emperor or whatever, Control Ray, Kill Ray, so no one else can be awakened? Like, what do you do in that instance? Because, again, no matter how well you know somebody, you never really know them enough to say 100% that they would never do something terrible in these unique circumstances, because there could be somebody that just loses it, like crack under the pressure of this, like they go insane because of this event that's happened. It's not anything that anybody's ever lived through or experienced before, so it could drive people to act in ways that they normally wouldn't, and those ways could be detrimental to society as a whole. So again, I think it's a really interesting story, highly recommend it, and I can't wait for the next issue. So I want to thank everybody for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.